From the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because life and truth matter. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man, we pick up where we ended on our previous broadcast and present the second half of an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast in which Hank talked with Professor Melissa Kane Travis, author of the book Science and the Mind of the Maker, what the conversation between faith and science reveals about God. Let's now join Hank Hanegraaff and Professor Travis in their conversation.
How do you teach your children or other people to actually process information, to think deeply about things in an age in which we are being bombarded with information but not really processing it?
That's a great question. It's something that I think about a lot. I was reflecting the other day on the fact that the public school system no longer, if it ever did require, I'm assuming at one time that it did, but at least now they do not require someone to master basic logic before they graduate from high school, which is a tragedy. And that's at the root of a lot of our problem today, I think. But in answer to your question about how do we raise our kids to overcome this ill of society, we have to, number one, make sure they're well-versed in the art of critical thinking. And the best way to do that is to teach them what I call the virtue of inquisitiveness. So make sure that when they hear a truth claim, they know to ask, first of all, well, what do you mean by, and restate the truth claim. And the very next question should be, how do you know that to be true? What evidence do you have for that, or what led you to that conclusion? And I have to give credit to my colleague, Mary Jo Sharp, for an excellent study she wrote on this a few years ago. And it's basically an entire book on how to properly question claims of other worldviews. And I think if we can equip our children to just do those basic things, it's a total win, and that they're going to be so much better prepared to face this bombardment of information from the internet and television as they go on through their lives.
Okay, so I think what you just said is so incredibly important, it needs to be repeated. In other words, I think you need to restate what you just said, because people should park on that as they listen to this podcast.
Okay. So I would say the first step is to make sure your children understand the basic rules of critical thinking, very basic logic. It isn't hard to equip them with that. There are some excellent resources out there to help you. But the second thing is to teach them the virtue of inquisitiveness. When they are faced with a truth claim, they need to be prepared to, first of all, ask the person making the truth claim, what do you mean by that? Okay, explain your claim more fully to me, and then teach your child that what they always need to do at that point is repeat it back, make sure they are understanding the claim being made. But then the very next question needs to be, why do you believe that to be true, or how did you arrive at that conclusion? So show me some evidence, or at least trace for me the path of reasoning that led you to conclude that the claim you're making is true. And it will amaze you how many times, the large majority of cases in which the person making the truth claim cannot state a reason for why they believe it to be true. And as I said before, I think that's a huge win right there for someone facing a claim that conflicts with the Christian worldview.
So for those of you listening into the podcast, you want to go back and listen to what Melissa has just said a couple of times and really get that into your head, because I think this is a blueprint for success with your children in an age of information overload. One of the things perhaps in this line of thinking has to do with the late Stephen Hawking, who seems resolutely committed to the notion that philosophy is dead, and as such, questions about the nature of ultimate reality have been ceded to science. Now, that's a claim, and that claim, I think, has to be examined very, very carefully.
Yes. The irony behind it is when he makes the claim that philosophy is dead, that now science is the torchbearer in the path to discovery of what is real, he's making a fundamentally philosophical claim. Unfortunately, for the person who ascribes to the worldview of scientism, they're stuck because science is it's moderated and it's defined and guided by philosophical rules and philosophical ideas. And so we can't get away from it. You can't even make any sort of argument using scientific evidence, an argument for a theory, for example, without using the laws of logic. So it's just an inescapable fact. And it's unfortunate that great minds like Hawking just fall prey to this idea of scientism, that science tells us everything we need to know, that it's the only elucidator of truth.
So here's a classic example of what you said. Here you have someone making a dogmatic assertion, but it's not a defensible argument. You spend a little time thinking about the premise of his statement, and you immediately realize that it itself is dead. It simply does not hold any water.
Right, exactly.
Why is it, in your estimation, Melissa, that post-Darwin, you have scientists who no longer seem to be able to grasp what the ancients did? You mentioned some of them. That if there is mathematical orderliness within the universe, then it stands to reason that this is best accounted for what you called earlier the maker thesis.
You know, I think we hit on it pretty well earlier when we were talking about philosophical presuppositions. It's really interesting to me to read the counterarguments in the materialist literature against the types of ideas I talk about in my book concerning the mathematical rationality of the cosmos. But on the flip side of that, not just Thomas Nagel, but scientists such as Roger Penrose and Max Tegmark have made the admission that we are looking at a fundamentally mathematical universe, and this cries out for explanation. But again, they're locked into their philosophical pre-commitments, and they are not willing to entertain the idea of the existence of God. So it's just a very interesting dynamic. And again, I just have to say, in my estimation, it always boils down to those philosophical pre-commitments.
You know, I love hearing what you have to say. I think about, again, as I mentioned earlier, and my audience well knows, I'm the father of 12 children. And those children, when they went to school, we happened to put them all through a Christian school. In fact, I was just at our youngest child's eighth grade graduation just before I came in to do the podcast. And they have been in a very favorable situation because when they have questions, they know that they have someone to come back and ask those questions to, as opposed to those questions throwing them or drawing them away from the Christian worldview. And in that sense, I want you to maybe expand on how important the discipline that you're involved in with Nancy and Holly and the rest, how important this discipline really is, how important it is for mothers, not just fathers, but maybe even particularly mothers to have a grasp on basic apologetics, because this is the inoculation process against what their children are going to face in school and in the workplace.
Well, I think that all of the women out there listening who are mothers themselves already know that it is typically the case that we spend more time with our children than any other person does while they are in their formative years, before they get their driver's license and start spending all that extra time with their friends, or they graduate high school and go off to college. So we have them from birth as this captive audience, this little sponge that just absorbs so much from our words and from observing our actions. And because we're the ones that they're around most of the time, we happen to be there when these big, hard questions occur to them, or when they hear a big, hard question from a peer at school, or when they hear a claim made against Christianity in a television show, or when they see someone make a statement on social media that goes against a core Christian truth claim. And so we have this golden opportunity to do conversational learning with our kids. And through having these conversations and not going into panic mode, we can show them that our faith is reasonable, our faith is credible, that we have great answers to the challenges that are often hurled at Christianity from secularists in our society today. So we serve as this educator, whether our children are educated at home or in a conventional school or what have you, we are educating them from birth on how to view the world. And part of their instruction on how to view the world is how to understand themselves in the context of the core Christian truth claims and in the context of broader society. So they're learning all those things from us. And not to say that dads aren't key teachers too, but as I said before, the case is usually that the mom is around the children for the majority of the day during their formative years. So we just have a really special opportunity to raise up warriors for the kingdom.
But you have to make time for that. And as you've pointed out somewhere, I remember reading about you talking about, I think it was in your Motherhood and the Life of the Mind article in the Christian Research Journal, that you can take a half hour that you might be watching television, or you can take the time in which you're driving your child to school and use that time efficaciously for the purpose that you just outlined.
Oh, absolutely. I often have moms say, well, I need to do some preparation before I answer these hard questions, and I just don't have time to sit down and read stacks of books, which I totally get. And I explain to them, look, you have to fold laundry, you have to cook dinner, you have to drive your kids to school and then drive yourself back home, or then drive yourself to your job or what have you. Take advantage of those windows of time to listen to excellent podcasts, to listen to excellent audiobooks, and just gradually start building your knowledge base and start with the basics. And you'd be really surprised at how much progress you can make by just using those snippets of time in your regular daily routine to better prepare yourself. And I love it when I hear moms come back and say to me, you were totally right. I was able to listen to this audiobook on this day while I was cooking dinner. And wouldn't you know, 2 weeks later, my seventh grader asked me a question and I knew how to answer it. So I like to say, look, let the Holy Spirit be your guide as you're learning, and you will discover that there is a purpose behind it sooner or later. And that has always been true with me and the kinds of questions my kids have come up with, and I've watched it happen over and over again in the lives of families in my community with whom I've interacted. So
I think Melissa, I think what you're saying is it's not a matter of time, it's a matter of priority. I mean, we all have time to eat, we have time to sleep, we have time to get involved in our, you know, in our favorite pastimes. It's not a matter of time, it's a matter of priority.
It definitely is. And it doesn't take a whole lot of sacrifice to make room in your life for some high quality learning. And I think once you get the ball rolling, you learn how to better fit it into your routine, and you realize, hey, I had more time than I thought I did. I just had to give up some things that were a whole lot less important than this.
And I can tell you from personal experience, I mean, my wife is absolutely amazing. I think she's a superwoman. She's not only done many of the things that you've articulated on this broadcast, but in addition to that, she's a voracious reader. When I contracted cancer, she knew more about my circumstance, my cancer, than I even do at this point. When I converted to Orthodoxy, she bought literally hundreds of books on Orthodoxy, and they're not just books, they're stacked up. I go through those books and I see that they're underlined and there are little notations on each page. So it is amazing what you're able to do if you put your mind to it, and I think my wife is a great testament to that, as of course you are.
Don't go away. In just a few moments, we'll rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Professor Melissa Kane Travis. Why do we exist? Why does anything at all exist? The question of cosmic origins and our place in the grand scheme of things has been debated for millennia. Today's popular narrative is that it all happened by purposeless, unguided natural processes. In her book, Science and the Mind of the Maker, Melissa Kane Travis offers powerful evidence that just the opposite is true. The cosmology, astronomy, biochemistry, and other disciplines strongly support what she calls the Maker thesis, which explains the origin, rationality, and intricacy of nature and the human mind's capacity to comprehend it. Find out what the conversation between Christian faith and science reveals about our Maker. To receive Science and the Mind of the Maker, call 888-7000-CRI during the financially crucial month of June and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit us at equip.org. We'll be right back with more of this special edition of the Bible Answer Man. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. The Christian Research Journal's primary commitment is to contend earnestly for the faith that was once for all delivered to the saints. In keeping with this commitment, the journal's mission is both evangelistic and pastoral, furthering the proclamation and defense of the historic gospel of Jesus Christ, and helping his followers distinguish between essential Christian doctrine and doctrine that is peripheral, aberrant, or heretical. In an age of subjectivism and moral relativism, may Christians ground their faith and values in the objective, reliable testimony of Holy Scripture. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today. Call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org.
Why do we exist? Why does anything at all exist? The question of cosmic origins and our place in the grand scheme of things has been debated for millennia. Today's popular narrative is that it all happened by purposeless, unguided natural processes. In her book, Science and the Mind of the Maker, Melissa Kane Travis offers powerful evidence that just the opposite is true, that cosmology, astronomy, biochemistry, and other disciplines strongly support what she calls the Maker thesis, which explains the origin, rationality, and intricacy of nature and the human mind's capacity to comprehend it. Find out what the conversation between Christian faith and science reveals about our Maker. To receive Science and the Mind of the Maker, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit us at equip.org.
Are you the product of millions of years of unguided, purposeless natural processes? Or are you created in the image of a loving God? Faced with the overwhelming scorn of evolutionary proselytizers, it can be hard to articulate the truth about God's creative work. And even among faithful Christians, many misconceptions linger. The Creation Answer book by Hank Hanegraaff puts answers to the most hotly debated origins questions right at your fingertips, giving you clarity and understanding. Learn to articulate the truth about our origins clearly and compassionately when you request your copy of the Creation Answer book or listen to Hank's insightful answers with the unabridged audiobook version on CD. Receive your copy of the Creation Answer Book or the audiobook on CD from the Christian Research Institute when you call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. Welcome back to a special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. The role that listeners like you have played in CRI's ministry has always been vital. Now it could well be more critical than ever. Stand with Hank Hanegraaff and the Christian Research Institute during the key month of June to ensure that we end the financial year in a position of strength. To make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, simply call 888-7000-CRI or visit us at equip.org. Let's now rejoin Hank Hanegraaff and his guest, Professor Melissa Kane Travis, in their conversation.
I love when I see women catch the excitement of learning for the glory of God, because there are few things I would say that are as exciting and fulfilling as expanding our knowledge in order to build up our own faith and to build up the faith of our kids. There's just nothing that parallels it.
I want to spend a little time cashing out the handle I gave you, along with your cohorts, Nancy Piercy, you have Holly, you have Mary Jo Sharp, you've got Kristen Davis. I've dubbed you the five female superheroes of the neo-apologetics movement. I want to cash that out a little bit with you. The first thing we talked about is you're females. And so you're setting an example for other females. I mean, obviously, apologetics is not about gender, but you are breaking some barriers here. It's very, very important for us to elaborate on those broken barriers.
Yes, I agree.
So do that for us. I mean, so I see you on the cover of CT, and I think, wow, there's a picture. That picture is a model for what is possible. Because, you know, Nancy, in the podcast I did with her, she was talking about how women are really being ripped off. They're being ripped off because they've been sold a cultural narrative, and they're squeezing themselves into that cultural narrative and forgetting that there are a lot of other avenues that can be explored and explored in your own time rather than the time that the culture is forcing on you.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And the fallout from that Christianity Today article that featured the five women apologists, my colleagues at HBU and I, it was so encouraging, the number of emails that I got from women who said, I had no idea that it was possible for women in my stage of life to pursue something like this, especially a theologically oriented discipline. And they were very encouraged towards pursuing at least some self-study of their own, but some of them even started investigating going into a graduate program. And I would often get questions, wow, can I really do this with children at home? And I told them, absolutely. When I entered my master's program at Biola to do the science and religion program, I had a six-year-old and a three-year-old. So I know firsthand exactly what it's like to balance those two things. It is a challenge, but it is doable. And I never felt that I had to sacrifice the really important things in my family life in order to make room for my learning. And the wonderful benefits have been not just being able to have these awesome, deep conversations with my children about theological and apologetic topics, but also being able to model, both of my kids are sons, being able to model for my sons what it looks like to be a woman who loves to learn. So not only am I modeling an adult who loves to learn, but I'm showing them what it looks like to be a mom who loves her family, who loves the Lord, who wants to keep her priorities straight, but who also makes room in her life to be a Christian intellectual. And I think that that will serve them particularly well when it comes time for them to choose a wife in the future. So in all these different ways, I think the female apologists who have emerged on the scenes now are doing such great things in Christendom. You know, we're showing that a lot of the stereotypes are false, and we're showing that we don't want to be restricted by what you were just talking about, these cultural narratives for what it is and is not suitable for us to do at any given stage of life. I'm grateful for my colleagues. I am honored to be numbered among them. I love the work that we're doing. I love how we're able to encourage one another. I hope that, as you say, we serve as role models and examples for the other women out there who sense that there can be much more to Christian life, meaning much more to the life of the mind, that can build them up spiritually and equip them to better raise their kids.
And I love particularly what you were just talking about with your own children. You had your children, you didn't do, and Nancy, again, talked about this in the podcast I did with her. A lot of women, they're forced into this mold where they put off having children until they're older. Then in the process, they are using carcinogenic kinds of products to keep children at bay, as it were. Then later on, they're using fertility products to try to get pregnant. And so they're sort of trying to fit a pattern that might not be the best pattern. Rather, you have gone with a prototype or a pattern, which is far better, where you have the children. All the while, you have that benefit of being a mother, being a superhero to your children, being a model to your children, and yet being able to pursue a very, very worthwhile career.
Yes, it has not been without its challenges, its sweat and tears, and there's probably some blood in there along somewhere. But at the end of the day, it has been incredibly rewarding. I would do nothing differently. And as I said, I have never felt that I had to sacrifice the really important aspects of my family life. And I'm very glad to have had my boys at a younger age, and to be able to learn and model learning as they're in their formative years observing me as an adult. So I think that it's been a win-win, and I hope more women will consider the fact that all of the education and career attainments do not have to be behind you before you can start considering having your children. You know, they're a wonderful asset, especially from a spiritual perspective. I mean, my kids, when you're having to stop in the middle of a term paper writing session to change a diaper, you know, reality hits. And it's such great spiritual formation, in my opinion. It keeps you humble, and it reminds you of your life priorities, for sure.
We live in an extraordinary time, and this is a time in which we have to have superheroes. We have to have people that are modeling for us what is possible, because it's so easy when you look at what you described as scientism and philosophical naturalism. You look at the cultural narratives and you throw up your hands. There's no hope. How in the world can we change the culture? And yet we can. There is, as you pointed out, the power of one. You think about Athanasius. Athanasius stood at a time when it was not popular for him to stand, and yet he stood on the deity of Jesus Christ. He stood against the Arian heresy. The Arian heresy at that time was enormously popular. So he today is an icon in our minds, in your mind, my mind, and the minds of many, many people. So in this age in which there are such ferocious difficulties for the Christian worldview, in which the whole Christian worldview is being upset, in which we're living not in the pages of the Bible, but the shadow of the Bible, this is a time in which we can as yet make a difference.
Yes, it absolutely is. We're dealing with idols today, and these are idols that have been around for millennia. I mean, there's nothing new under the sun, right, when it comes to these false ideas that are raised against the kingdom of God. And so we're in what Lee Strobel has called the golden age of apologetics. We have some of the best philosophy and scientific evidence at our disposal now. So we should be able to face these cultural idols, things like scientism and materialism, with the biggest guns we've ever had. We just need people to rise up and be willing to equip themselves to do it. And I think it's a very exciting time. I am not discouraged at all by what I witness in the culture. I see a lot of things that are angering and saddening because I know how much they break the heart of God. But I also know that we're in an era where we can wage war against these false ideas in a stronger manner than ever before. And so I am just thankful that the Lord saw fit to call me into this kind of battle, because this is where I thrive.
I want to go back to the moniker of the five female superheroes of the neo-apologetics movement. I want to park on that word neo-apologetics. There's such a thing as Darwinism, there's neo-Darwinism, and I think there's a distinction that can be made with respect to apologetics in the past and apologetics in the present. Oftentimes, and I have noted this over the years, apologetics in the past has been about winning arguments, using hammers, demonstrating your mental acumen, as opposed to winning the person. And I've seen a big, big change in a lot of younger apologists. I can say younger apologists because I'm now almost 68 years of age. And they're more keen about winning people than winning arguments. And I think that emphasis needs to be underscored in red.
I absolutely agree. And I will have to confess here that this is a lesson that I learned the hard way. When I was an early 20-something and I was first introduced to the discipline of apologetics, it was through the writings of some of the very, very big old school apologists. And so I wasn't about laying out an argument graciously with gentleness and respect. I was about winning an argument, and that's all that mattered to me. I wanted to win the argument anytime I was in a discussion with someone who did not agree with the Christian worldview or who disagreed with the central truth claim of Christianity specifically. And so over the decades, I have learned in the beginning the hard way, and as time went on, learned through observation of some of the, what you're calling the neo-apologists, that apologetics needs to be, by necessity, a holistic discipline. We have to minister to not just the minds of those who need Christ, but we need to be ministering to them emotionally. We need to be ministering to their imaginations. And I think my colleague Holly Ordway and her work in imaginative apologetics is really leading the way in a beautiful manner where apologetics and the imagination are concerned. So it's not just about, hey, my argument squashes your argument, or I've won the debate that I've had with you. It is really about opening the person's mind to the person of Jesus Christ. At the end of the day, that is always the goal. And pounding someone over the head with a hammer, so to speak, is never going to accomplish that. And I am very grateful that in this neo-apologetics movement that we have today, that lots of eminent apologists have made these kinds of connections. And the work that's being done now is better than ever before, I think.
We'll pick up Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Professor Melissa Kane Travis in just a few moments. The Bible Answer Man broadcast and CRI's growing array of outreaches have never been more needed than they are today. And that's why we won't be shy in asking you to stand shoulder to shoulder with the Christian Research Institute through your persistent prayers and generous financial support. Stand with Hank Hanegraaff and CRI in the battle for life and truth, and receive as our thanks for your gift a copy of Melissa Kane Travis's essential new book, Science and the Mind of the Maker: What the Conversation Between Faith and Science Reveals About God. Simply call 888-7000-CRI during the financially crucial month of June and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. We'll be back after the break with more of this special edition of the Bible Answer Man. Are you the product of millions of years of unguided, purposeless natural processes? Or are you created in the image of a loving God? Faced with the overwhelming scorn of evolutionary proselytizers, it can be hard to articulate the truth about God's creative work. And even among faithful Christians, many misconceptions linger. The Creation Answer Book by Hank Hanegraaff puts answers to the most hotly debated origins questions right at your fingertips, giving you clarity and understanding. Learn to articulate the truth about our origins clearly and compassionately when you request your copy of the Creation Answer Book or listen to Hank's insightful answers with the unabridged audiobook version on CD. Receive your copy of the Creation Answer Book or the audiobook on CD from the Christian Research Institute when you call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org.
Why do we exist? Why does anything at all exist? The question of cosmic origins and our place in the grand scheme of things has been debated for millennia. Today's popular narrative is that it all happened by purposeless, unguided natural processes. In her book, Science and the Mind of the Maker, Melissa Kane Travis offers powerful evidence that just the opposite is true, that cosmology, astronomy, biochemistry, and other disciplines strongly support what she calls the Maker Thesis, which explains the origin, rationality, and intricacy of nature and the human mind's capacity to comprehend it. Find out what the conversation between Christian faith and science reveals about our Maker. To receive Science and the Mind of the Maker, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit us at equip.org.
The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. The Christian Research Journal's primary commitment is to contend earnestly for the faith that was once for all delivered to the saints. In keeping with this commitment, the journal's mission is both evangelistic and pastoral, furthering the proclamation and defense of the historic gospel of Jesus Christ, and helping his followers distinguish between essential Christian doctrine and doctrine that is peripheral, aberrant, or heretical. In an age of subjectivism and moral relativism, may Christians ground their faith and values in the objective, reliable testimony of Holy Scripture. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today. Call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. You've tuned in to a special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. Have you ever thought about why the universe is fundamentally mathematical and comprehensible, and why the human mind is capable of apprehending it? In her new book, Science and the Mind of the Maker, Melissa Kane Travis shows that it's unreasonable to expect that minds, which have allegedly evolved by purposeless natural selection to be fit for survival and reproduction, would be suitably equipped to grasp the complexities of modern science. Rather, the structure of nature and the human mind have a peculiar resonance with the mind of the Maker. Receive your copy of Science and the Mind of the Maker when you call 888-7000-CRI during the financially crucial month of June and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit us at equip.org. Let's now rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Professor Melissa Kane Travis.
Talk about the organization of your book, Science and the Mind of the Maker. Reading through it, I was thinking, you know what, this is very, very accessible. It's the kind of book that I want to put in the hands of people because, again, accessibility is so important. We talked earlier about the fact that we live in an age of information overload. I have stacks of books that I have to read every single week. And the information overload just drains you after a while. And so I really see books as very, very important when they're laid out in a way that's accessible. And one of the things I liked about your book in particular, Melissa, is how you have the bullet points at the end of the chapters.
Yes, I myself am a big fan of bullet points, so I was very grateful to my editor that he allowed me to include those in all of the chapters. Because I find, especially when, like you said, you have a lot of reading material to get through, a lot of reading material you just want to get through even, you need a constant refresher. I can't remember what the term is. I think it's called spiral learning, where you're introduced to ideas, the ideas are elaborated upon, and then when you get to the end of the chapter or the essay that you're reading, the author says, okay, after all of this, here are some key points that we need to highlight. And it just helps solidify in your mind what the most important takeaways are from the chapter or essay that you just read. So my idea for the book was, number one, accessibility to a lay audience. When I was first approached to write the book, I was a little worried that they were asking me to write something that would just be one more dime a dozen science and faith books. There are tons and tons of science and faith books out on the market. I've read most of them. But my editor said to me, look, here's what our target audience is. We want to make this kind of information much less intimidating to the average Joe in the church pew. We're talking about people who would never in a million years pick up a book written by someone like Bill Dembski, right? People that are just intimidated and shy away from that kind of writing or that level of writing. So what we want you to do is pull the strings together and write it as sort of a gateway book. You know, bring up lots of different topics and treat them fairly and thoroughly, but do so in a way that the person who's hearing about these kinds of arguments for the very first time can say, oh, yeah, I really get this. So I agreed to write the book, and I kept that goal in mind all throughout my writing process. But one of my personal passions in the science and religion discipline is the history behind all of the things that we talk about. So what I did was, in the book, I'll have a chapter that talks about an argument based on scientific evidence and philosophy. But then in between that chapter and the next such chapter, I've offered chapters that cover some of the intellectual history that's related to the arguments that I'm giving. So it's a very interdisciplinary book, and it's only right at maybe 210 pages long, I think. So the reader is getting a great introduction, not only to the philosophical issues that are at play in the science and religion debate, but also some of the science from biology, from cosmology, from neuroscience, and then some of the history. I talk about ancient Greek philosophers. I talk about the early church fathers, the giants of the scientific revolution. One chapter that was particularly fun for me was talking about the physics revolution of the early 20th century, where I got to explore Einstein and Max Planck and Arthur Eddington, and the things that they would say in their writings that are extremely friendly to the Christian worldview of the cosmos. So my hope is that the quote-unquote average Joe in the church pew, the person who has maybe never delved into this issue of science and Christianity or science and religion more generally, will be able to pick this up and feel intellectually challenged, but not challenged to the point that they give up. You know, I want them to be able to digest the information and to be able to have really good conversations with their kids and their friends and their colleagues about what they've learned.
You mentioned Bill Dembski, and I think that brings up another issue, and that is, I think that it's important for someone like yourself to do top apologetics, to digest books by Bill Dembski that might not be accessible to the average person, although he has written some accessible things for the average person as well. But it's important for someone to do top apologetics so that you can do pop apologetics or popular apologetics. Because if you don't get it at the top level, then oftentimes what you're writing at a popular level is full of very easy to explode myths or holes or contradictory thoughts.
Yes, that's true. So the fine line that we have to walk is bringing it down to a level that's accessible enough that the reader grasps the arguments, grasps the information you're trying to convey, but we can't do that to the extent that we're giving them just enough information to make them dangerous, because that's where we get a whole lot of the poor arguments that float around and just will not die, much to my chagrin, in the popular Christian community.
What do you think about, maybe this is too controversial a subject, but you think about the age of the earth issue. I mean, it took me a long time to write about this myself, but it seems to me oftentimes that that issue alone is critically important. Now, obviously, it's not an acid test for orthodoxy. It ought not divide us as Christians. But on the other hand, I see kids that go to school, they immediately realize the implausibility of a universe that's 5,000 years old, and they make the leap of logic that that's what the Bible teaches, and therefore the Christian worldview no longer holds up in an age of scientific enlightenment. It's a sophomoric way of thinking about it, but oftentimes that's the connection that's made.
You're absolutely right. I have a dear friend who works with students at Rutgers University. She is an apologist. And she runs an apologetics organization right there on the campus of this very, very secular university. She has students from many different worldview persuasions attend these meetings where lectures are offered from Christians who are in either apologetics or a related academic discipline. And one of the things Julie has said to me time and time again is that she sees these students come in as freshmen, these students who were raised in a Christian home. We might use the word, not that I like using this word, but we might use the word fundamentalist Christian homes. So they come into the university with this idea that if the young earth paradigm isn't true, then Christianity as a whole cannot possibly be true, because they have been taught, whether by well-meaning parents or well-meaning teachers, that the only biblical view, that's the word that's always used, the biblical view is the young earth paradigm. And so when they enter these college courses where they're presented with information that leads them to conclude the young earth paradigm cannot be true, then their faith is shaken to the extent that many of them just walk away, or they have a crisis of faith that lasts for years before they're able to come to some sort of reconciliation in their own mind. So I think the lesson to be learned from that is to be so dogmatic on a secondary issue or subsidiary issue when it comes to talking about the compatibility of Christianity and the natural sciences, does a whole lot more harm than it does good.
You touched on your children's apologetic series, and I can't think of anything more important than that. Elaborate.
Oh, yes. So one of my very first projects, I was actually still a student in my master's program when I pitched this project to Apologia Educational Ministries. And it's a 4-book series entitled The Young Defenders Series. And each of the 4 books deals with a different tough question and different argument for the existence of God. And 2 of those books deal with science and faith issues. The very first one is entitled, How Do We Know God Is Really There? And it's a fiction story. The main character that runs through the series, his name is Thomas, named after Doubting Thomas, the apostle. And he asks his dad to explain to him how we can really know that God does exist. And it's a kids level presentation of the cosmological argument for the existence of God. And then the second book is the one that's based on Paul Nelson's Metamorphosis lecture, and it's called How Do We Know God Created Life? So it's all about the character of Thomas going to an insect exhibit with his mother, who happens to be an entomologist, and he starts asking questions about some of the information cards he's reading at the museum, and he's wondering, well, could this have all really been an accident of nature, Mom? How do we know that God had a hand in creating living things? And then the other 2 books, one addresses the evidence for the resurrection of Jesus, and it's entitled How Do We Know Jesus Is Alive? And then the final one addresses the moral argument for the existence of God, and it's entitled How Do We Know Right from Wrong? And it delves into the problem faced by materialism of not having anything to ground their ideas of right and wrong, good and evil in. So that's my little 4-book collection. I felt like those were probably the most essential apologetics topics to introduce kids to at a young age, somewhere between the ages of 7 and 10, I'd say.
Well, Melissa, you are amazing. I just loved having this conversation with you. I know it's going to help a lot of people. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. This was so fun.
Thank you for listening to this special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. To hear this Hank Unplugged podcast interview with Professor Melissa Kane Travis in its entirety, look for it in the near future at equip.org, iTunes, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. In appreciation for your gift to help strengthen and expand the life-changing outreaches of the Christian Research Institute, Hank would like to send you Science and the Mind of the Maker, What the Conversation Between Faith and Science Reveals About God by Melissa Kane Travis. Simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. You can also write CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter. Are you the product of millions of years of unguided, purposeless natural processes? Or are you created in the image of a loving God? Faced with the overwhelming scorn of evolutionary proselytizers, it can be hard to articulate the truth about God's creative work. And even among faithful Christians, many misconceptions linger. The Creation Answer Book by Hank Hanegraaff puts answers to the most hotly debated origins questions right at your fingertips, giving you clarity and understanding. Learn to articulate the truth about our origins clearly and compassionately when you request your copy of the Creation Answer Book, or listen to Hank's insightful answers with the unabridged audiobook version on CD. Receive your copy of the Creation Answer Book or the audiobook on CD from the Christian Research Institute when you call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org.
Why do we exist? Why does anything at all exist? The question of cosmic origins and our place in the grand scheme of things has been debated for millennia. Today's popular narrative is that it all happened by purposeless, unguided natural processes. In her book, Science and the Mind of the Maker, Melissa Kane Travis offers powerful evidence that just the opposite is true, that cosmology, astronomy, biochemistry, and other disciplines strongly support what she calls the Maker Thesis, which explains the origin, rationality, and intricacy of nature and the human mind's capacity to comprehend it. Find out what the conversation between Christian faith and science reveals about our Maker. To receive Science and the Mind of the Maker, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit us at equip.org.